Blog Talk Radio.
Fasten your seatbelts and put your foot on the gas. The Red Light Sports Network presents the Red Light Sports Ramble.
They say it's cool and that, but I don't. They probably don't really think it's that cool.
With Troy Otradovic.
He is really good.
And Evan Witalison.
He's awesome.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Red Light Sports Ramble. I am Troy Otradovic, not joined by the marvelous Evan Witalison this evening. He is feeling a little bit under the weather with no voice, apparently yelling at his kids all day as school has commenced. And for those that are loyal listeners, Evan does work with our youth. And he apparently had a bad day and lost his voice. So I'm going to go solo tonight, and there's some big topics going on in the world of sports tonight. And, you know, the biggest headline is Ryan Lochte. And the Brazilian police have decided that they want to charge Mr. Lochte with falsifying a police report. And now I haven't really followed this on social media, nor do I care to. I think you made a huge mistake, an embarrassing mistake, lied, didn't want to get in trouble, and you know, basically trying to save face. He was in a place he probably shouldn't have been, blah, 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 all that stuff. We've all made mistakes in the past. Okay with that. He apologized. I'm good with that. Move on. Cool. But I think he embarrassed himself. You know, and the thing, I've said this a million times. A million times, if you really want to get to an athlete, hit him where it hurts. And that's in the pocketbook. Well, Lochte sponsors dropping left and right. So it did hurt him in the pocketbook, and, you know, you learn your lesson that way, and you learn it really quick when you start losing money. But now you got to look at the possibility that he could go to jail. And how lenient are they going to be in Brazil with Lochte coming down there, knowing all that we know? I mean, you got to remember, folks, we live in the world of social media where everything hits Twitter. Everything hits Facebook. You can find stuff on the internet before it even happens, I think. So the one thing that is bad about social media, though, is that details can get skewed and details may not be credible and details can be falsified. Rumors, stories, is it true, is it not true? That's the downside to social media. Rumors get started, people go with the rumors, and you got to make sure that all the information is credible. However, there's a videotape of things that went on, and I think we know the real story of what went down, and Lochte apologized. If you or I falsified a police report intentionally, I mean, depending on where you live and your jurisdiction, you could either face a misdemeanor or a felony. I'm not sure how they're going to classify this in Brazil. Because it seemed to me from the little bit of reading I did, and I'm no expert, I'm not a lawyer. If there is a lawyer listening, please call in if you know Brazilian law at all. But based on what I read and what I know is, again, falsifying the police report can be classified as a misdemeanor or felony, but you can also serve jail time and pay fines. Now, I don't know how the Brazilian law works, but I would imagine it's pretty similar to falsifying a police report in the United States. And just because you're Ryan Lochte, I mean, this could go against him. And that's why I want to say, and it would have been nice to get Evan's thoughts too, but I'll get those tomorrow night. Are they going to be lenient on him? Are they going to throw the book at him because he's such a big name? I don't know which way they're going to go. So back to what I was saying, if you or I falsified a police report and went to court, we could be at the mercy of the court and say, well, I didn't know. Sorry, I made a mistake. It won't happen again. And please, judge, do not send me to jail. I will do whatever you say and put me on probation. Here's the problem. Ryan Lochte has to go to a country he doesn't live in. So what good is probation? What is probation in Brazil going to get Ryan Lochte? And what is the court going to get out of giving Ryan Lochte probation? What are they going to say? You're not allowed to enter the country? I mean, you could do that, I guess. But what's that going to do to prove your point here? And my initial thought is he is going to jail. I really believe that. And again, I put myself in a situation where if this was me and I had to go in front of a judge, what good reason do I give for falsifying a police report to this extent? I can claim I'm being young and stupid or I didn't want to get in trouble. But again, I don't understand what's going to happen here. Why would they bring charges against him just to give him probation? Because he does not live in the country. Now, again, I am not a lawyer, and I don't claim to play one or even pretend to know the law. It's just my common sense thought. What would a Brazilian court get out of giving Ryan Lochte probation after summoning him to court? If that was going to be the end result, I would imagine they wouldn't even file the charge. But I think he's in a world of hurt. I think he's going to serve some jail time down in Brazil. And again, I think that, you know, when he got back after his apology and lost his sponsors, you know, I don't know if he learned his lesson, but it hit him in the pocketbook. And, you know, a very embarrassing mistake. And then I wanted to touch on the last part of Mr. Lochte. Rumor has it that he will be joining the cast of Dancing with the Stars. So, is that really a good move? I mean, really, is that a good move? What good are you going to get out of going on Dancing with the Stars? I can't imagine how that's a good career move. Not this close after this incident. And anyway, he may not be able to because he'll be sitting behind bars down in Brazil. But if anybody's listening in, give me a call, 646-915-8254. And let me know what you think about Lochte. Dancing with the Stars. Good move, bad move? I think it's a bad move. It's a terrible move. Last time I checked, and my wife watches the show, and I've watched it with her, and I watched it the whole season Donald Driver was on. There's a component of this show where the public vote determines whether or not you stay. America determines whether or not you move on. And I'm sure you're going to have some part of America that maybe has a little empathy for him. But I would imagine that the general consensus is you were pretty stupid in Brazil. You embarrassed your team. You embarrassed your country. Now you had to go down there, and even if you get off and don't serve jail and go on Dancing with the Stars, who really is going to vote for you? Now, I certainly would not vote for you. Like I said, I did vote when Donald Driver was on the show, but I haven't since, and nothing is going to make me want to pick up the phone and vote for you. Not after what you did in Brazil. So it's kind of funny. You know, the world of sports. And, you know, maybe he wanted to make a name for himself. Maybe he didn't think all gold medals were enough. Well, he sure did that. Not in a good way, though. But moving on, the other thing I wanted to talk about tonight is Major League Baseball and the deal that went down today. It's kind of a head-scratcher, literally a head-scratcher, as the Los Angeles Dodgers dealt long-term veteran catcher A.J. Ellis to the Philadelphia Phillies for veteran Carlos Ruiz. And I have to scratch my head here. Literally, I'm scratching my head. I know I don't do a video show. It's audio. But literally scratching my head, wondering where the upgrade is coming. You know, they talk about Ruiz and, you know, maybe a little batting average, maybe a little more power. But this isn't a major upgrade. By no means is this a major upgrade. And the biggest concern I have about this is, why have you just ripped apart Clayton Kershaw's battery mate? From what I was reading, Ellis is Kershaw's best friend and his preferred catcher. We know that pitchers are fickle. Pitchers are superstitious. Some pitchers are very superstitious. They feel comfort with a certain catcher. Now, I'm not saying that, hey, this has to be the way, and I'll go back a couple years, and I can't remember exactly who the pitcher was, but this conversation came up in Pittsburgh a couple years ago, maybe the second year they made the playoffs, about a personal catcher and have to have this catcher every time they pitch. And that's fine. Because at the end of the day, I don't think catchers get enough credit for what they do behind the plate during a game. Call the game. You see pitchers shaking off signs all the time. Well, a majority of the time, they don't shake those signs off. And a majority of the time, well, not a majority of the time, all the time, the catcher may be looking to the dugout for a call, but many times the catcher is calling this game. And I don't think catchers get enough credit for calling a great game. You know, when's the last time a no-hitter was thrown and you heard somebody say, man, the catcher called a great game? No, it's always the pitcher. The pitcher gets the glory. The catcher never gets any credit. So think about this, folks. In a game, and the count's 2-0, bases loaded 2-0, maybe one out, and you got to get a ground ball. Got to force that double play to get out of the inning. But now it's 2-0 on a pitcher. You can't get fancy. You got to throw a strike, but you have to try and induce a ground ball. That catcher is going to call a pitch that he knows his pitcher can make to induce a ground ball if he throws it where he's supposed to. And so in this situation, a 2-0 count, one out, bases loaded, I'm not going to say bottom of the ninth, I'm going to say maybe eighth inning, game tied or one run lead, and he throws the perfect pitch. Batter doesn't take it, swings, induces the ground ball, double play, team's out of the inning, and the announcers say, what a great pitch. He really got himself out of a jam. Sure, he made a great pitch. But I will guarantee that catcher called a perfect pitch. And so, folks, since it was a shortened show tonight, and Troy actually had on air for 15 minutes with a few technical difficulties. There's 1 minute left on the live show. And I'll go a little bit into the archive time and go a little bit over, but 1 minute left on the live show. It's the remainder on the archive on Twitter at Red Light Sports. So I don't think catchers get enough credit for calling games. And that's what A.J. Ellis did with Clayton Kershaw. Now, Clayton Kershaw is a heck of a talent. I mean, the guy can pitch. But the comfort level with his catcher, and Kershaw is human. He's not going out and mowing down batters every game. He has in stretches. But who's the guy that walks out to the mound? Who's the guy that walks out there and calms him down? Who's the guy that comes out there and says, just pitch? Who's the guy that maybe goes out there and says, man, that was my fault. I should not have called, you know, a 2-1 pass. You know, I should have called the breaking stuff. I should have called for a slider. A catcher will go out and do that if you have that rapport. And that's what Kershaw and Ellis had. They had rapport. Now, Kershaw is a professional. Kershaw is an all-star pitcher. He can probably adjust to Ruiz. But why do you break that up? I mean, what did you really gain? If you're the Dodgers, what did you gain from this? Maybe a home run or two more? But what did you damage? Did you damage Kershaw? And that's the question that I put out on Twitter. And unfortunately, the show is not live anymore, so I can't have you call in. But get at us on Twitter if you're listening to this archive, at Red Light Sports or at Evan Witt Sports. Did the Dodger deal damage Kershaw? Now, he's not even off the DL yet. He's pitched some bullpen sessions. He'll be back soon, but he's not going to be with Ellis. And maybe Grandal will be his new catcher. I don't know. It may not even be Carlos Ruiz. But my initial thought is, why break up Ellis and Kershaw to gain a home run or two? I know offense is important. I'll be the first to admit that. You got to score runs. But when it comes to playoff time in Major League Baseball, you got to have the solid pitching, and you got to have your guys pitching awesome. Ask the Pittsburgh Pirates a few years ago in the wild card when Bumgarner just mowed them down. And again, too, in that game, did the catcher get any credit? No. It's all Bumgarner. So I guess what I'm going on here, folks, is give the catcher a little bit of credit for calling a game. So that's my big concern with this trade. The biggest concern of my trade is not offense. It is the relationship that Ellis had with Kershaw, and how is that going to affect Kershaw? Again, he's a professional. It shouldn't affect him that much. However, you got to go back to in-the-game situations. Throw the friendship out of the way. You know, maybe Grandal or Ruiz can't come out there and joke with him to settle him down, but they can come out there and talk about it. But how much trust will you have in these catchers? How many signs is it going to shake off? And when you shake off too many signs, how pissed off are the catchers going to be? You know, when the pitcher is shaking off signs, of course that means they don't want to throw that pitch, that they don't believe in the catcher. You look at the good tandems, and you just see the pitchers go. They have faith in their catcher. They put the one sign down, and they want a heater right down the middle because he thinks you can throw it by the batter, then so be it, I'm going to go for it. And if your pitcher doesn't trust your catcher, he's going to shake that sign off and maybe go with something off speed. Again, I'm being hypothetical here, but it's reality. The catcher does not get enough credit, and that's where I'm going with this. The trade to me is a silly trade. I don't think the Dodgers gain anything, and I think, if anything, it could hurt them more than help them. Like I said, what is a homer or two going to do in the rest of the regular season? Is he going to be able to produce offensively in the postseason? I'm throwing my hands up in the air, folks. Who knows? Because isn't it going to be Grandal? Isn't he going to be the catcher? I know you're going to look at matchups and go right-handed, left, so on and so forth. But when it comes to the postseason, you got to have the pitching. And if the Dodgers are going to make a run, it's got to be with Kershaw, because I had mentioned this the other day. I am not thoroughly impressed. Not thoroughly impressed with this Dodgers pitching staff right now. Kershaw is the ace, and so Kershaw is going to have to put him on their back, and they're going to have to ride Kershaw if they're going to make a deep run. And when you look at the teams that have won, there's that one guy or two guys that you definitely can ride the shoulders on, and you got to be deep in the rotation. You can't just have one guy. You have to have a rotation. You have to have at least three deep in the playoffs to have three quality starters. Because if you looked at a five-game series, you got to win three games. If you have a really good 1 and 2, maybe you can get by. If you only have a good number 1 and 2 and 3 or so-so, well, what if you drop those two games? So let's look at this, folks. Let's look at this situation. You got one quality starter, one guy that you know is going to win you a game, and you got a five-game series. So you send that guy out and he wins game one. Your second and third guys, and even your fourth guy, depending on how many days rest, but normally you're going to if you're down 2-1, which you could be with these so-so guys, maybe you could steal a win. But these are guys that aren't going to go out and you know you have a great chance to win because they're average 2-3. If you're down 1-2 in a 5-game series, you're probably going to throw your ace out in game 4 to even the series. But now what do you do in game 5? What do you do in game 5? You throw one of these so-so guys out there? With two solid pitchers, you can jimmy it a little bit. You got two guys, maybe you go up 2-0. You throw 3 and 4 out there, maybe they lose, and you still got your ace going in game 5. Now if you have 3 quality guys, this is where the teams are, these where the champions are built. You got 3 solid starters that you know that any of these 3 can go on any given night and they can win ball games and dominate ball games and give your team the best chance to win. I don't think the Dodgers are 3 deep. Maybe they could go 2 deep. I know Modest pitched well, but there's been some movement. There's been some injuries. Just they're going to have to mold it together here at the end of the season to make a deep run. But they're going to need Kershaw. And so, again, it goes back. That is my whole concern, is the effect that it has on Kershaw and the way that he pitches a game. Again, natural pitching ability, Kershaw's great. He's a top-notch pitcher. Who wouldn't love to have Clayton Kershaw on their team? And so I'm going to wrap this show up with a little bit of NFL talk and preseason going on tonight. And I know it's preseason, but it is game 3. It is game 3. And so you're looking at a couple of games, but the starters are playing a little bit. And it was Atlanta and Miami, and I know you're not gonna play big into the preseason just because the starters played a half. But there's a couple of things I took from these games tonight, because now I'm going to watch week 3. I'm not a big preseason watcher, but I watch a little bit of week 3 because the starters play. And I was really impressed with Ryan Tannehill. It looks like he may be making a progression to help Miami. Now they're in a tough division. But I also like Jarvis Landry. I like this kid. I like this kid out of Miami. And so Tannehill to Landry could be a good combo. For you fantasy people out there, remember that name, Jarvis Landry. Yeah, I think he's a receiver that's going to put up some pretty big numbers with Ryan Tannehill. And Tannehill is not a bad quarterback, not a great quarterback. He's middle of the pack. You know, the one thing he needs to do is he needs to get consistent and be able to move the chains. And it seemed like he did. I didn't watch his whole half, but he seemed to move the chains. And then the second game, Dallas and Seattle, and it's at halftime right now. I wanted to get a good glimpse of Mr. Ezekiel Elliott, and they played him a little bit, and he ended the half with 48 rushing yards. So maybe the Cowboys have found their future running back. You know, since they got rid of DeMarco Murray, they had a little bit of a what are we going to do now kind of situation, and that didn't work out so well. Injuries. But I like Ezekiel Elliott, being a Big Ten guy that I am. I had a chance to watch him a lot when he was at Ohio State. And, you know, this is a guy behind that offensive line. I'll go ahead and I'll say a bold prediction. He could be Rookie of the Year, Offensive Rookie of the Year, if he stays healthy. I know he's got a hamstring injury. But Ezekiel Elliott is going to be a good running back, folks. And he's running behind a great offensive line. And Tony Romo's got to be salivating right now to see how Elliott ran in his first action. Because we go back 2 years ago when Romo had a running game and Romo put up good numbers, career-type numbers. When the game is on Romo's shoulders and there's no running game and he's getting his butt beat up, you're not going to see a great Tony Romo. When you have the threat of play-action pass and you have to honor that run, that's when Tony Romo will be at his best. And that's when you'll keep guys off Tony Romo. Because that one, that half a second hesitation, that play action, will stop the defensive line and give Tony Romo that extra second to get rid of the ball and not get hit. Now, he'll still get hit after he throws. I mean, it still happens. And, you know, if I'm a betting man, I'm going to bet that Tony Romo is going to get hurt during this year for maybe one, two, three games. That brings me to their backup, Dak Prescott. I like this kid, too. Cowboys, I think, are going to be a pretty decent team if they can figure some things out defensively. But offensively, I think they're going to be a pretty solid unit with Witten, Dez Bryant, Ezekiel Elliott, very good offensive line. They might be able to score some points if Romo can stay healthy. So with that said, folks, I'm looking at the time, and, man, it goes fast. Even when I'm going solo, it goes fast. So I hope you enjoy the show tonight. Evan will be back. Like I said, he was out with no voice tonight. But I hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll get back at you at a later time. Fasten your seatbelts, put your foot on the gas. I am Troy Otradovic. Have a good night, everyone.